It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 516. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email me questions and suggestions for show topics at miketechshow@gmail.com. You can leave me a voicemail message at 240-949-2450. And that's Mike Tech Show, all one word, on Skype. I do have a voicemail that I'll get to later in the show. You can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/MikeTechShow, facebook.com/MikeTechShow, and also /MikeNationNet. We also have the wiki, and that is at mtswiki.com. There you'll find links to all the past shows, the audio, the show notes. That's a great resource. And again, that's mtswiki, W-I-K-I.com. I have a long show tonight, jam-packed show, because last week's audio was totally distorted. Here's the story. When I started recording way back with Ustream, I would use their web interface. So I would just log in, and they had a nice web interface, and it worked, and it served me well for years and years and years. Well, you had trouble broadcasting in stereo. So I ended up purchasing way back Ustream Producer. And I started to have problems with the audio in using that. So I dropped that program and went back to the web interface. Well, August 1st, Ustream got rid of that interface. And they replaced it with some terrible, terrible, terrible web interface that's totally different. And once I brought up Ustream Producer last week, there was these clicks and there was these pops and snaps that I could actually see visibly in the Audacity recording. And I said, enough of that. Let's go to this old web interface. But everybody in the chat complained that the audio was distorted and horrible, but I was seeing pretty good audio in Audacity, and in my headset, everything was fine. Well, I did not do a test. I should have stopped after doing a sample recording, and I should have played back the audio, because when I played back the audio Friday night, or wasn't Friday night, it was actually Thursday night last week, because I did the show a day early, because I was away for the weekend, and when I went to edit the show, I listened to the audio, and it was all distorted. It was horrible. And I said, that's it. I can't release this. I don't even want to try to clean it up. It would be so much. It would be easier for me to just re-record the show. And I had no time to re-record the show. So it was easier for me to just scrap it and say, I will make it up this week. I'll do a double show. And that's what I'm doing. And so that's why there's going to be a long show tonight. I'm going to redo some of the material and content from last week. I have some new content and some lots of email and lots of stories. And you got to hear my Amazon story, which I will get to shortly. Let's take care of business by recognizing Instant House Call, the sponsor of the Mike Tech Show. This show is brought to you by Instant House Call. It's the on-demand remote support and unattended remote access. It's all in a single tool to remotely access your customer's PC or Mac instantly with no pre-installed software. Install unattended remote access to perform maintenance on your schedule. You've heard me talk about when I log in the middle of the night to do server updates or to do upgrades or patches, I use unattended mode for Instant House Call. You can try it free for 15 days right now by clicking on the link on my website at miketechshow.com right on the left-hand side, or just by going to instanthousecall.com, enter the promo code MikeTechShow, all one word, MikeTechShow. Enter that in the promo code, get your free 15-day trial, kick the tires, play with it. You will be buying a subscription to Instant House Call after you're done testing it. I guarantee it. So let's begin with my Amazon story. I have a Lenovo laptop that you've heard me talk about. It boots in 10 seconds. It's got Windows 8.1. I have a tremendous 500 gig SSD Samsung drive in it, 8 gigs of RAM, Core i7. It just flies. The power adapter went, and that was kind of old and ragged, and this was a used computer to begin with. Well, when I tried to plug the power adapter in, this is how I noticed. I was at a client yesterday, and I'm using this laptop, and all of a sudden I got a low battery warning. And I'm like, how can this be? I'm plugged in. And I looked, and there was no light on the brick for the power adapter. And I tried everything. Adapter's dead. So I figured, let me go to Amazon and see if I can get an adapter. They had a 14-foot, 120-watt adapter for this Lenovo, only $25. I was like, perfect. Now, I'm an Amazon Prime subscriber, so I want this right away. Remember, this is my main laptop that I use for consulting, other than my MacBook Pro. And I got to get back to what I'm doing tonight for the audio and what's different tonight. Which I totally forgot to cover, I realize. So I'll get into that in a minute. I know I'm bouncing around on you. Well, I go on Amazon, and when you go to check out, you have options for delivery. Do I want next day? That was just $399. If I want it free for two-day delivery and get it by Friday, that was free. And then there was an option that I didn't expect. Same-day delivery. Do you want your item today? And I'm like, yes, I do. $5.99. I can have it the same day. What a wonderful concept. Now, it's not a drone that's going to come by and deliver it, although that would be cool. And I want that to happen. I'm like, what carrier is going to deliver this same day? You know, it's very interesting. So I click same day, and I'm like, pretty happy. I'm going to have it. I get that the item's being shipped already. I get that notification in like an hour, and I will receive it by 8 p.m. Wednesday night. I'm like, this is very cool. This is how online shopping should be. 8 o'clock comes, I don't have it. 9 o'clock comes, I don't have it. So I'm kind of ticked that it didn't get delivered, and it was using this weird carrier called A1 International, who I haven't heard of. So in the morning, I get up this morning and I go to front door. There's no package there. I was hoping maybe something came in the morning. So I call Amazon customer service. Now, the best Amazon customer service can do is refund me my shipping. So they refund me the $5.99. I expected that, and I know that, and that's an easy one. Well, am I going to get the shipment? They have me hold and they contact the carrier. And they say, I will receive that today. Oh, by the way, they made an attempt last night to deliver it. What do you mean you've made an attempt to deliver it? There's no signature here. Why didn't they just leave it? And I know for a fact that they didn't make an attempt, because I was actually out front of my house most of the night last night. And I actually was right by the door. So I know for a fact that there was no delivery attempt. That was a lie. That was a downright lie. And I absolutely knew that the courier is lying. So I tell that to Amazon, but there's nothing they can do about it. So now I go about my day, and 4 o'clock today, I am now frustrated because I didn't receive the item. And I call the shipping company, and I give them the tracking number. And they said, this is New York, and they say, sir, there's nothing we can do. We see that the carrier has it. Oh, by the way, it's not A1 service. A1 service has now pawned that off to Philly Express, who I've never heard of. I have no idea who Philly Express is. They gave me the phone number for the dispatch. I call the dispatch office for this Philly Express. I get a guy by the name of Bill. Nice guy. And he says, oh, yeah, the Amazon package. Well, let me see what we can do. That's a, yeah, you're going to get that. I was like, what? I said, I know they didn't try to deliver that last night. He didn't answer. And I said, what's going on? He said, oh, you're going to get that. You know, you're going to get that tonight before 8 o'clock. And I was like, great, because, you know, I really want this. Please, you know, please deliver it. But here's what I did this afternoon. Just in case, I ordered it again with next day delivery because I absolutely have to have this cord for Saturday. I am going to a client, and I got to have my laptop adapter. I got to be able to charge it up. So I'm not taking any chances, and at best, I'll have two of them. At worst, I'm hoping for one. 4 o'clock, he says, I'm going to get this, you know, tonight. I get a call from him at 5, and he says, Mr. Smith, are you sitting down? And I'm like, why? He says, we've lost your package. I said, how could you have lost the package? I said, you know what? Know what? I said, come clean with me. Admit something. You lost this package yesterday, didn't you? And you really didn't make an attempt to deliver. And, you know, I'll give him credit for being honest. He said, yes, we lost it yesterday. And I said, that means, and I wanted to get into, look, if you lost it yesterday, why did you lie to me when I talked to you at 4 o'clock? Why not come clean? This is where I got angry. Okay, he told me the truth at the end, but why wait and why make the customer suffer? If you've lost the package, unless they thought maybe they would come across it and find it, I don't know how they lost it. But now I call Amazon back, and I'm really mad, but it's not Amazon's fault, except that they picked this carrier. And I have no idea how they picked this carrier. I call Amazon. Why customer service for Amazon is so incredible, this is why. First, Mr. Smith, we're going to credit you the shipping for the item that you ordered that you're going to get tomorrow. I said, that's fine, but I said, I need a guarantee that you're not going to use A1 again for this item, or I'm probably not going to get it. Now, the person I was talking to could not guarantee me who the carrier is going to be for my reshipment, and I don't want it to be A1. I asked to be connected to a supervisor. It takes so long on the phone that I hung up. The supervisor called me back after I hung up. I get a call from the supervisor, and they are contacting where it's be at the shipping department at Amazon, and they're going to do everything they can to make sure it ships via FedEx or UPS. So I'm going to get the item tomorrow. They credited me the shipping. They credited me for the lost order. And then on top of that said, we're giving you a $15 promotional card for your next order. So $15 off your next order. You don't even have to do anything. Just your next order, you click use promotional items. You don't even have to enter a number. It'll automatically deduct the $15. I'm going to get my item the next day. So hopefully tomorrow I'm going to get it because now this is Thursday and I really, really want this. Why am I telling you all this detail? Because the customer service for Amazon, they had no control over that shipper making the mistake. They have no control over that. And I totally understand that. I needed them to make it as good as possible as they can. And given how upset I was at the shipper, they did, you know, really come through. And let's hope that I get the item tomorrow, and I'll share that with you next week. I just wanted to share that because that's what you want from where you're purchasing anything. You want customer service will come through and take care of you when there's a problem. And that's why, and yes, this is a shameless plug to use my Amazon link. And it's amazon.micnation.net. Amazon, A-M-A-Z-O-N, dot micnation, micnation.net. You use that link to purchase items, your price is the same, and a commission comes back to me to help support the show. And that's a great way to show your support for this podcast. And I really appreciate it, and thank you so much. Until they disappoint me, and Amazon has yet to disappoint me, they've always come through and make good anytime there's a problem, whether it's their fault or not. They always make good. And that's why I'll use them over Newegg, because Newegg's good, but man, customer service for Amazon is just unmatched. I want to cover a few things from last week, but first let me get to the audio changes for tonight. So what did I do tonight to guarantee or at least help for the audio quality to be better? I'm only using one camera, and there seems to be a problem with Ustream Producer when you have multiple cameras. I've limited it to just one camera, and I've done something different for the recording of my audio tonight. I'm running Audacity on my MacBook Pro. The MacBook Pro is connected to my mixer for the main out. So the main out, I have a cable going to the audio in of my MacBook Pro. And before I went live tonight, I did a quick recording and played it back, and it was fine. And Ustream Producer was running. It's just that I wasn't broadcasting live. So I did do a test tonight just to make sure everything's working. I was happy. Everything's working good. Let's keep our fingers crossed. And this is the setup that I'm going to be using. A couple administrative notes, too. There will be no Mike Tech Show next week. I have a large project with a company that I'm doing a server migration Wednesday night, and then I got a ton of work Thursday night. And then I'm going away again for the weekend, so it's impossible to do a show. Now, there hasn't been a Tech Vets in a few weeks. I'm available Monday night and Tuesday night, and Carrie is also available. I'm going to respond back to Carrie and see if we can do a show Labor Day Monday night. So Monday night, September 1st at 8 p.m. Eastern time, we'll do a live Tech Vets. We haven't done one since the meetup in Arizona, so I'm excited about doing another Tech Vets. So I wanted to take care of that. Let me cover some of the material from last week that I think is important. The last patch Tuesday, Microsoft released several patches, and two of them have problems that they pulled. But there are also issues with a third patch that Microsoft has not pulled. I am going to link both the articles, and I have personally witnessed these patches causing blue screen of death on two systems for a client of mine. So I have firsthand experience. And when you have a problem with this patch, when you get the blue screen, it doesn't even let you, you can't go to last known configuration. You can't go back to a safe mode with networking. No repair works. You are redoing your computer. It's an ugly, ugly blue screen of death, and it's directly caused from bad patches. It's impacting a driver somewhere, and it's not every computer. And it's across all operating systems. So it's Windows 7, Windows 8, 8.1, even Server 2012, Server 2008. It's across all the Windows operating systems, but it varies. I have a ton of clients with no issues with these patches. Yet I got two with that have directly had problems with their Dell Precision workstations, and they've crashed. And I had to rebuild both of them. The patch numbers, the knowledge base numbers, are 298.2791, 297-6897 and 297-0228. Unfortunately, it's probably too late. If you really were impacted by this problem, you've already blue screened, you've already had it. You were able to reboot after the updates. It's the next reboot after the updates. So you could go a few days and not have a problem. And on that next reboot, that's when you get hit with it. Because this was a week later for my client that had this. I'm always rather be safe than sorry. Go in, look if you have these updates. And if you do, remove them. You have nothing to lose. Why take a chance? Those articles will be in the show notes. A client a couple weeks ago brought me his laptop. He was having trouble with Firefox going into Outlook.com and QuickBooks Online. It no longer worked. The first thing I think of is, wow, let's reinstall Firefox. Let's reinstall Java. So I uninstalled Java, uninstalled Firefox, first reinstalled Firefox, then reinstalled Java. Went to Outlook.com, wouldn't load. Website just won't work. I realized something with Java when I wanted to see the status of JavaScript within Firefox. The new version of Firefox, they disable JavaScript and then bury how you can actually go and fix it. I'm like, this is crazy. Why do that? Why bury this change? They're so worried about you being infected that they've buried an important item where I think they should make it easier to activate. You have to type about:config. Type about:config. You're going to get changing these advanced settings can be harmful to the stability, security, and performance of this application. There's a button, I'll be careful, I promise. Now, this is in Firefox at the address bar line. Click that. Then in the search bar, type Java. And you will see JavaScript enabled or disabled. When you see JavaScript, you can right-click and either make it true or make it false. Right-click and toggle, and you'll toggle that on and then restart Firefox. And now he was able to go to Outlook.com. I was able to go to QuickBooks Online and all the websites that he was being prevented to go to. See, at first I thought it was a Java issue, and it wasn't. It was just JavaScript was disabled on the latest upgrade to Firefox. And once you disable that, then you got to be able to enable it if you're going to any websites that uses JavaScript. Simple as that. You have to enable it. And I was trying anything and everything to fix the problem and then realized what was really going on. And then that's when I found out how to Google and research how to enable JavaScript in Firefox in the new version. So I just wanted to put that out there. Now, I run into a problem every now and then. I have a client that the Java updates have to be very, very managed. They cannot get certain Java updates until they're allowed by their broker dealer, okay? Because this is a financial company. And a tip for just something that if you're in this situation and you need to disable Java updates, go to the control panel, double-click Java. Then at startup, there's a tab there that you can check the box to auto-check for updates and to not check. So this way, the user won't be prompted for the upgrade. Now, this puts you in a position where you got to be able to, when you do have to do the update, you should have a means to be able to push the update or log in remotely and apply it. Use installing something like Nynite Pro for for that organization would be a big help, and then you can manage and push the Java update to all the systems when you need to. That's just another tip, something that I've run into with a client. Law firm called me and asked for me to look into why they couldn't get to a government website for Philadelphia, for the city of Philadelphia, the court system. They needed to be able to get to their login and get information on cases that they're working on. And everybody in the office could not get to the website. And this was very puzzling because I could get to it. And they knew that the site was up because someone tested it on their iPad or their iPhone. They were able to get to the website. So they called me and I logged into the server and boy, I couldn't get to the website. I took a chance and I went to the DNS. They have a server. They have a Windows server, I think Small Business Server 2011. And I started DNS in the administrative tools and looked at the forwarders, because this is where when you make a request and you have DNS running on a server in your environment, when you type a website, that website goes to your DNS server and that server says, well, I need to now send you to the right IP address, and I'm going to do this by forwarding it to the DNS servers that are in the section for forwarders. The servers that were being used were Comcast servers. So Comcast DNS is 75, 75, 75, 75. And their alternate is 75, 75, 76, 76. I see that they're the primary because that's what I set up. They're a Comcast account, and that's the DNS. So I put 8.8.8.8. That's Google's. And then I put 4.2.2.1. That's level threes. These are public DNS servers. I put them as the first servers for the forwarders. I still leave Comcast's. Then I restart the service. Anytime you make a change in DHCP or DNS, it's always good to restart the service. Restart the DNS service. Then, just to make sure, anytime you're changing DNS, it's a good practice to flush your DNS cache. So now, I open up a command prompt. I type ipconfig /flushDNS. That flushes all of the DNS cache. So now it's going to go to whatever change that I made. I test going to the website. It comes up perfectly. So now all I really have to do is flush the DNS cache for all the users. They don't even have to reboot. Now, if you reboot, that automatically flushes the DNS cache. I show one of the users, I log onto her computer, I'm talking to her on the phone, I show her how to flush the DNS cache, and she's able to go. Now, there's only like five other computers. She volunteers, says, hey, I could go run around and do that to everybody's computer. I said, oh, thanks. That's going to save a lot of time, and it'll get everybody up and running. But I wanted to share that because here, clearly, nothing was blocking it. I don't know why Comcast, for some reason, their DNS, they weren't forwarding for this particular website, but Google clearly was. It's so hard sometimes to troubleshoot why a browser can't get to a website or not. I always look into the DNS, change the DNS when possible. Now, great question in the chat was, Mike, this is from Uncle Al, why not use OpenDNS? For this particular office, we don't want to block any content. Now, for a home office or for someone that I've went through the explanation and the pros and cons of OpenDNS, there is inherent issues with OpenDNS and Active Directory. There are some special configs and things that you have to do. So in a typical office environment that has Active Directory, I avoid open DNS right now. I think it's easier to use something like Untangle or something like that to, you're offering not just blocking and filtering content, but you can protect them from lots of other things and intrusion detection and all sorts of stuff. So that's something that I carefully look at before I implement it. Now, I didn't want to get into this, but Jack in the Box, if you don't use forwarders in the DNS server, it will resolve itself using the standard inbuilt root hints. No other DNS server or service to ever rely on. I've actually had a couple issues with that, where with a client where I've had to put the forwarders in, where we were having a problem. That's an interesting idea. There's pros and cons to both of that. I should tackle that on a special server show, and I'll pull in Winston Wolf, I think a really good question, and sort of maybe too advanced for right now, but I always feel safe putting the forwarders in, and I always use the, and I'm surprised I didn't do that when I set up the server. I usually mix and match the Google with the ISP, putting Google first, then maybe the ISP server second in case there was ever a problem with Google DNS. A couple other items that I actually discussed in last week's Lost Show. I am playing with F-Secure, which is an antivirus that I am now starting to put on servers. And I'm going to do more talking about that down the road. I'm actually testing it on my workstation. Two servers, I have it installed, and it's going to be my go-to antivirus, it looks like. Keep that in the back of your head for if you have to recommend an antivirus. And I got to admit, I'll be honest, I'm a reseller. So this way I make a little money on the licensing, and I needed a good, reliable antivirus for a server. I remember I was kicking that around a lot. I tested Sophos, and one of the first things, I did not want to install a SQL database and go through all of that. I was like, no way. Big no to Sophos. So it's F-Secure, and that's what software I'm looking at. Malwarebytes. I'm going to put a link to the possible fixes for updating. Now, a lot of us have been running into Malwarebytes' inability to perform an update, and it just keeps popping up. Can't update, can't update, can't update. So what's going on? I went trolling in the forums for Malwarebytes, and I seen there's an article listing everything that you should try. So I've tried these things, and I've still had an issue, but it's still worth looking at, and I'm going to put that link in there. Something else I run into, it sounds simple, but I have a client that I moved to Sherweb, hosted exchange, and they want to have a public calendar. Now, when we say public, it's public within all of the employees who's on that hosted exchange server. So we create a public calendar, and it won't appear when you click calendars in Outlook, whether it be Outlook 2007 or Outlook 2010. Discovered something, doing a lot of research and playing. In order to make a public calendar visible in the calendars of Outlook, you must right-click on the public calendar and select Add to Favorites. Now, it won't add to favorites, but you got to do that. Then, right-click and open in new window. When you open it in a new window, after you clicked Add to Favorites, guess what? When you click Calendars, now they're there. And it would be under Other, and then you can check it, and now you can view your regular calendar that's with your mailbox and the public calendar all on one screen. That took a couple hours to research and play with and solve, so I figured, you know what? I'll share that since I had to go through that effort. Give a listen to this voicemail.
Oh, hey, Mike. This is Charlie in Florida. Long-time listener. Great shows. Thank you very much. My question has to do with traveling with a laptop. The hotels, as you know, it's open. So anything that you do, everybody can see. I want to purchase a little travel router. There's bunches of them on Amazon and on eBay. But any recommendations for a good one that will give me some security while I'm on open Wi-Fi would be appreciated. Thanks a lot and keep up the good work. Bye.
All right. I have a few comments on that. The router is really only going to help you if you have an Ethernet connection in the hotel room. Now you have a nice natted little firewall where you could have your little router and in the WAN port connect the connection to the hotel and then have your computer connected into one of the ports. Yes, that works. Or you could be Wi-Fi. Create your own little hotspot in your room that's locked down for your device. I don't know, and correct me if I'm wrong, but if it's a Wi-Fi, I don't know if this portable router is going to help you. You would have to have the WAN port connect to that Wi-Fi connection because that would then be NATed to you. I would look into the following. Look into some of the pay-as-you-go VPN services where you can use the VPN service to log into to create that secure tunnel across the open Wi-Fi. Another one would be to use a MiFi adapter. That's the safest. Or this is where you would get your cellular service that creates an access point. Your phone may do that. I use my hotspot on my iPhone all the time when I'm in a public situation because now I got a secure connection using the cellular service, which is much more secure than using an open Wi-Fi connection. So look into, if you don't have a phone that can do a hotspot, look into a MiFi adapter. I think that's going to be a lot better for you. Or one of these VPN services. Another way to do it is to use a remote access to your desktop and put in remote access software, remote access solution at your desktop and then remote into your desktop and then go out to the internet. I've done this with Instant House Call. Put unattended mode on my machine at home, and then what I would do is then use my, wherever I'm at, sign in as a specialist and connect unattended to my workstation, and then I have full access, and that's very secure, and now I'm going out my own home system. There's a few solutions, but I don't think the portable router is your answer to all of the situations you're going to be in when you have public Wi-Fi. Let's get to some email here. This is from Alistair. Thanks so much for playing the promo for the Admin podcast. I have had so many nice email from listeners saying they like my podcast. In episode 514, you mentioned a listener email in regarding how he should migrate from SBS 2008 server to Windows 2012. He got me thinking, as this is what I do a lot in my day job, so I did a podcast on it. And his podcast 005 on server migrations. So, Alistair, thank you so much for that. And I will have a link in the show notes to the Admin podcast where he did a whole podcast based on one of our listener questions. So thank you. This is from Podnuts. Mike, longtime listener, I really appreciate all that you do. You have had so many tips that I needed to solve problems that I was facing in my own computer repair business. Your show is always packed full of good tech info. I have been hosting Podnuts Daily and Podnuts since April of this year. And it has been a lot of fun interacting with people in the tech community. I enjoy talking to other techs and learning and growing in my own business. I have decided to take the Podnuts show to a weekly format. I, along with a co-host, will be doing a live call-in show for computer techs on Sundays at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. You can check it out over at www.podnuts.com/live. If you could spread the word, I would really appreciate it. And Jeff, I think I just spread the word. So that is Sundays, 4 p.m. Eastern Time. You have Podnuts. Check that out. This is from Austin, regular listener, and he says, hey, I know you said you are unhappy with Malwarebytes as updates are not happening. I am also not happy with that product. Boy, don't we want them to go back to version 1.75? They really messed things up with 2.0 with Malwarebytes. Very unhappy. He's looking for another anti-malware product that is as good or better than Malwarebytes. Well, you got Super Anti-Spyware, but I still think Malwarebytes was better than that. We just have this problem with the updating of the definitions for Malwarebytes, and they really got to get over that and fix this. I so want that. I'm going to see if F-Secure is going to be my replacement for Malwarebytes, so stay tuned. Austin also emailed me and asked for my audio, the distorted audio from last week, and he's volunteering to clean it up and fix it up. I really appreciate that. But I didn't want to go through any trouble. I don't want to put anybody through the hassle of doing that. I thought it was easier to just do everything new this week. So, but thank you for the offer. I really appreciate that. This is from Martin. I wanted to comment on show 515. You mentioned about the USB exploit. Steve Gibson talked about this on Security Now show 467. That was that exploit that I mentioned that can impact USB devices and travel and migrate over a USB thumb drive. And Steve Gibson addresses that security, so I'm going to have a link to that show. It's going to be a lot of links tonight. This is from Kevin. Not sure how late I am on this. I'm working for a mid-sized CPA consulting company, and we don't have any compliance requirements but have used Checkpoint full disk encryption and media encryption for almost 10 years, and it's formally PointSec. It might be more than you want because of the low user count you're looking for. There is management server, and it's all software blade-based now. You pick the software blade you want. We use the FDE and media encryption blades, and I have been considering adding the AV and anti-malware blades. It's a really nice product from a great company. There are some quirks with the way they are doing business, but that's another story. The real reason I write is because having to deal with it for many years are some issues in general about FDE, and that's a full disk encryption. When we have a system that won't boot, it is usually fixed automatically by Windows 7, you know, Windows 7 Pro. But what comes into play is that the disk needs unencrypted first. Windows in general fixes problems on boot up that you don't even notice when it's not encrypted. So are those boot issues FDE related, or did the user power off the computer improperly, which they probably did? Either way, there is that layer that has to be removed before you can troubleshoot and repair like a normal system. You are correct, and that's one of the big problems with trying to do repairs when you have a system that the whole hard drive is encrypted. It makes it very difficult to do repairs and to do work, which is just what Kevin's referring to here. The decrypting process is done by making a bootable device, USB, CD, or DVD, from the management console and booting to it. The problem is the time it takes to decrypt can be 8 to 10 hours for a 250 to 500 gig hard drive. Smaller SSDs have helped this time greatly. After decrypting, rebooting usually fixes it. If it doesn't, there are ways to create live Linux distros and allow, after proper credentials, you can access the system's hard drive without decrypting. A question I would have with the methods you discussed: if you full disk encrypt standalone, how do you have proof of the process? With a management server, there is documented proof as well as logs. Again, probably too much. It is too much for the smaller organizations that I'm working with. But I'm curious. The key files needed to create and decrypt media are also contained on the servers. Kevin, here's what I do. I create the bootable media to decrypt and have the key, the key file that you're talking about, on a bootable CD for each of these systems. I then take that and store it in a locked box in the office that only the president and I have access to. So this is one of the solutions of how I handle it for a small financial company that has TrueCrypt, and we're still using TrueCrypt, by the way, right now, on their systems. We're waiting for this final report for when everything settles down, and it kind of has, to see when the dust settles where TrueCrypt is and what's happening before we make that big change to BitLocker. Kevin, thank you for sharing that. Large organizations, organizations more than 10 or 15 users, then I would absolutely recommend using a server-based management console for coordinating the encryption keys and the logs. And yes, that makes sense. So I'm able to get away with it because it's a much, much smaller organization. This is for Ken. I recently had to install a program for work. Although the program installed, my hard drive ran out of space at the final stages of the install. Needless to say, this caused some problems. The application would not launch. So I said, no big deal. Since I was working with a virtual machine, I'll just increase the size of the hard drive, reinstall the program. No dice. The program said that it was already installed and quit. Okay. Then I will uninstall the program, then reinstall. No dice. The program would not uninstall either. Great. Just then, I remembered listening to one of your shows that mentioned Revo Uninstaller. So I gave it a try. Revo worked great. It found all the registry keys and files associated with the program, and I was able to delete all of it. Then, after, I was able to install the program properly. As a side note, I am using Oracle VirtualBox on my PC for creating virtual machines, and it works great, and it's free. Also, if you ever need to expand the C drive, as it is sometimes difficult to expand the drive that the OS is on, I've used Gparted. It is an ISO that you download and boot from, and it worked for me. I also want to mention a great free tool that I use at work to create build books. I know you like SIW, and it works great. Great tool as well. The one I use is called WinAudit. Perhaps these tools can help a listener or two, and I've included the links below. So we have Revo, Gparted, VirtualBox, and WinAudit. Thanks for the great shows, Ken. Ken, thank you so much for that. And I will have all of these links in the show notes. Boy, there's going to be mega links for tonight's show. Useful software plus a couple of tips. This is from Chris. Love the show. Can't get enough. I love the software tips and now have a growing list of bookmarks. A part of my job involves connecting remotely onto servers and connecting to workstations, usually after the user has gone home for the day. Quite often, I will tell the user just to leave the PC on when they go home, and I will log in and look at the issue after hours. However, sometimes they are on autopilot and end up shutting down the machine. I then come along later and cannot get into the PC. Wake on LAN is a free and works very well. Just add the IP and MAC address obtained from the DHCP console, and you can turn a machine on or off with ease. It may take a little while to set up a large number of clients, but once done, it's a useful source. I have the link here and I'll include it. Another aspect of my job is migrating and installing new PCs for users on the various sites that I support. To reduce the amount of time that is spent on site disrupting the user, I complete the majority of the installation via VPN in our work group. This is how we do it. Boot the new machine and create a VPN connection to the site server. Make sure that the allow other people to use this connection box is ticked. Connect to the VPN and log in with administrator credentials. You can now join the domain as if you were at the site. Depending on the site's DNS settings, you may need to add the IP address of the DNS server in the VPN's network settings, or it may not locate the domain controller. I then add domain users to the local administrators group and log off the administrator's account. After pressing Ctrl-Alt-Delete, there will be a small network icon in the lower left corner, Windows 8 or lower right for Windows 7. Click on the network icon and you will be presented with any VPN connections created on the computer. Note, these VPN connections must have been created using allow other people to use this connection option. Enter your domain credentials for the particular user. The VPN will connect. Authentication to the domain will be processed, and group policies and logon scripts, including your map drives, will be pushed to the client. Also, note that the user must be a member of the VPN users group to enable them to log on via the VPN. Once connected to the user, I can then set up Office and Outlook Exchange, also add printers and antivirus. Next, I add software from Nynite.com, and the majority of the work is done without setting foot on the client's site. If there are a number of new machines to deploy, I stack them up on top of each other and multitask. I can also get other things done around the workshop while these machines are doing their stuff. All that then needs to be done is take the machine to the site and complete the data migration and any other tasks that may need to be completed. It saves so much time and makes the whole process more efficient with less disruption. My last tip involves cleaning up older files on a NAS or USB drive using a VBS script. I use it to clean up older Shadow Protect files from on-site USB drives each month. The retention settings don't tend to do a good job to remove the backups, and the drive eventually fills up and backups stop working. This will remove files older than the specified number of days. It can be set to run X number of days via the task scheduler. Very useful and can be applied to a number of different situations as well. Here's what I'm going to do. First, Chris, thank you so much. I'm going to take your script and I'm going to add it as a text file to download from the show notes. So, Chris, thank you very, very much for your tips. This is from Preston. And this is something I've mentioned before. Others have told me about this, and I've actually activated it on my Windows 7 machine. And it's a God mode, a folder. What you have to do is create this new folder with a very specific name, and you will get some functionality that's not available in your normal menus. And it's called God mode. And I want to thank Alan for sending this in. I'll send a link to the instructions on how to activate God mode. Thank you. This is from Robert, and this is a follow-up on the Mac hard drive issue. Hi, Mike. I sent you an email about a Mac where we had the kernel panic, and we tried a second hard drive, and it did the same thing, and we could not erase the hard drive. Our theory about the SATA cables on the hard drive was correct. We went online and purchased the SATA cables, placed the old hard drive back in, and were able to erase the hard drive and reinstall Mavericks, and it worked great. Robert, thanks for the follow-up. I appreciate that. This is from Jeff, web-based remote access. I was wondering if you or your listeners had any suggestions on a solution for web-based remote desktop solutions. Remote Spark is something I have looked at so far, and this would be something that would act as a terminal server of sorts, and people would log into the Windows server and have a session on one larger virtual machine to do their work. I have heard of solutions that offer web-based RDP and then send someone a rolling code to authenticate through their email as a two-factor setup. And I've not been able to find anything like this before. Chrome Remote Desktop is not a robust enough solution for this as Chrome needs to be running and open on the system for it to work. Any suggestions on this would be much appreciated. Remote Web Workplace is what SBS, Small Business Server, includes for giving users access to the remote desktop. Instant House Call, you know I use for administrating and working remotely on the systems, but it's not web-based. And what you can do, there's an agent that you have to download, and once you run that, then you're able to connect in. 100% web-based, the only one that I've ever seen that works really good is Remote Web Workplace for Small Business Server. Unfortunately, they don't make that anymore. And I don't know if there's a way to duplicate that. You ask an interesting question, Jeff, and I'm not sure. So let me know what you think about that. One other note. I would also like to bring up Trend Micro's endpoint security solution. I am about to try this as an alternative to TrueCrypt and will let you know if that works for me. Sophos has another offering for whole disk encryption, and both Trend and Sophos seem to be recommended in the Spiceworks community. I am testing Trend's solution now and will let you know how it works. Jeff, I want to know, because if TrueCrypt doesn't work out for me here, I'm forced, which it looks like I'm going to be. I really don't want to deploy BitLocker, and it looks like I'm going to. Since I mentioned the Sophos whole disk encryption in the past, I haven't had a chance to test it. So it'd be great if you're able to give me some feedback on that and what you think. You know, how's performance? What's the boot process like? Does it tie directly into the security of Windows like BitLocker does? I like TrueCrypt for the fact that the operating system doesn't even begin to boot until you authenticate. And I like that second step for authentication to get into the system. How does Trend work? And if you get a chance to try Sophos, that'd be great. This is Robert, reinstalling Windows 8 from disk. Hope you are having a great day. I emailed you some time back about being able to use Windows 8 DVD to reinstall Windows 8 if you have a pre-built system in case of a hard drive crash. Windows 8 does check the BIOS for the key and will install. However, if you have upgraded to Windows 8.1 in order to reinstall Windows from disk, you will need a Windows 8 DVD, as a Windows 8.1 will not work because the product key in the BIOS is for Windows 8. So you will need to reinstall Windows 8 and then go through the upgrading to Windows 8.1 again. Oh, no. There is a tool that will allow you to upgrade to Windows 8.1 without having to go through the Windows Store. And we use it at my workplace, but I have not yet to be able to find a link on it on the internet. I thought I would pass this information on, and if I find the link to the program that will allow you to upgrade to Windows 8.1 without having to use the Windows Store, I will let you know. If there is a link like that, please let me know. Email me. And Robert, I hope you find that link. Let me know. That's a link I'm very interested in, and I know a lot of listeners are. Thank you. This is from Alec. Proxy problem. Hi, Mike. I'm having an interesting problem regarding the proxy server of a laptop. My friend's Windows 8 laptop has been getting a problem where he can't connect to anything internet because it was saying proxy error. So, me being the tech know-it-all, I volunteer to fix it. What have I gotten myself into? I have been spending a week trying to fix this problem, but everything I do doesn't change a thing. I've watched countless YouTube videos and been reading tons of forums, and I just can't fix it. So far, I tried deleting the web browser, changed the settings, switched PC settings, make sure proxy wasn't messed up on the laptop, and I even found an article by Google on how to fix it through the registry, but nothing works. With school approaching within a few days, we are endlessly trying to fix this. Do you have any idea on what you can do to fix it? Thanks, Alec. Technical technicians in the chat who is actually here tonight. Alec, if you go into the browsers and turn off the proxy, that's one. I'm wondering, have you run Malwarebytes rootkit and TDSS killer rootkit? Have you ran Junkware Remover Tool, Adware Cleaner, Super Anti Spyware? You got to run the whole gambit of cleaning utilities that we talk about here. You need to run all those utilities. There is something in there that is still taking over the proxy and taking a look. Have you looked at your hosts file and make sure that it was cleaned? That's one. Make sure that it's clean, but I would run all the standard utilities that you've heard me talk about on this show. Another thing you could try, and this may or may not work, but it can't hurt. Go to tweaking.com's all-in-one repair tool. Run all the repairs, because that fixes a lot of Windows settings, and you may get lucky and it may fix that. I would throw all the utilities that you possibly can at this, because there's some kind of an infection there that's causing this. Well, I promised a long show, and that's what I've given you. It's over an hour. That's a little longer than a typical show, but I had a lot to cover here. One final note, something I want to mention. TechNibble has released the Computer Business Kit version 3. He has digital PDFs. You can link to all of the forms and the contracts just via one link for a browser, and everything's laid out perfectly for marketing your company, for all of the forms that you would ever consider needing starting your own repair business. Maybe you have a new shop that you're opening. This is the definitive kit for everything you would need. There are forms that I use. I've used version 1 years ago when he first came out with it. There are forms and language on forms that you would not even dream of, and there's no way you could figure this out on your own. If you're in the business and you're looking or even thinking of starting your own repair business, you begin with this, and that's the Computer Business Kit version 3. I'll have a link in the show notes where you can purchase this. It's going to be the best purchase you would ever make. I use this. I have these forms. They're in part of my repertoire. The contracts, just having examples of good contracts and the language that you need to protect yourself. You're going to learn a lot just by looking at these forms and these samples that you can then tweak, put your logo. This is it. And just buy it. If you're in the business, it's going to help you out. If you're thinking of starting the repair business, it's going to help you. Also, make sure use my Amazon link for all your purchases, or anybody that you know, share that link, amazon.micnation.net, and that helps support the show. Instant house call for any of your remote access needs for repairing clients' machines. It's a great solution. Make sure to check that out at instanthousecall.com and use the promo code MikeTechShow. I want everybody to have a safe and happy Labor Day weekend, and have a great, if you're off, hopefully you are, take the time off, spend it with the family or your significant other, and have fun. Be safe this weekend. I will not be recording next week, so it'll be the week after, which I guess that would be September 11th, will be the next show live. Everybody take care, and I'll see you then at the same time, same channel. Bye-bye, everybody.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.